What is happening out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Uncle Ham, and joining me, as always, mi amigo, the body armor king, Kyle, Kid Corona, Freedom Filson.
Yes, I'm here, folks. I've been practicing my chi. I've been trying to get my body armor to come closer to my hand, but it's not working. The force is not strong with me. Do you ever watch those guys on YouTube and stuff, that these Tai Chi masters that
they make their hands hot?
They have all these videos where like their students are trying to hit them and they can't even touch them. Like they're falling over from 10 feet away.
Oh, you're talking about McDojo life.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I love those videos. And then they'll fast forward a couple videos later and it'll have like that guy versus a real MMA fighter. And of course,
the dude gets
for whatever reason, the chi doesn't work. Are there still people? I know that was like a popular thing in the 80s. You know, when Karate Kid came out, I remember there's a lot of people flocking to the dojos to be trained. Are there people today in 2020 that still think that they have a master that knows the dim mock, that can focus his energy to where you can't be? You think that's still a thing today? Because all those videos I watch, they all look old.
I think it's still a thing today.
I hope it's a thing. Because
McDojo awesome. Life might be the greatest, one of the greatest Instagram pages.
It's a great page. But like, again, on there, all the videos look like they're from the 80s, if you ask me.
I don't know, but. And I know this is going to come off and rub people the wrong way, but whenever you're looking at like a, some sort of fighting master like that, okay. Yeah, like and he's like my height, he's like 5'7", weighs like 270. Got the, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like they're all like short, fat white guys.
Always.
That are walking and they don't ever, they don't do it. They just tell you what you're doing wrong. And then they have their cult guys believe that like you run at them, they can just touch your shoulder and you're going to fall down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I feel, you know what it makes me, I think I've even discussed this before, we've talked about this, but it makes me feel bad for people that have trained under them and think that they actually have a skill, like a skill set to stay safe.
Yeah.
And then they get involved like maybe in an altercation in the street. And then you learn the hard way, you don't really have a skill set.
That's
like what you
terrible.
Learned is how to get your ass kicked. That's what you
learned. That's a horrible thing to let people have the false.
That's what I think.
It thought that they know how to defend themselves.
It's almost a crime. Like it really is. It's almost instilling them with false hope and makes them go do, like you'd be convincing somebody they could fly. So they're going to run and jump off their house.
I knew a guy that was like, I was like, I don't know what we were talking. And you know, I was like, are you a martial artist? And he was like, oh yeah. I go, oh really? Like what style did you study? And he's like, oh, ninjutsu. Thought he was joking, and then as the conversation went on, I could tell he wasn't joking. I didn't have the heart to tell him that, like, ninjutsu is not really a art form. That's, like, more for television.
And he's not supposed to tell you that either because he's a ninja.
Well, he didn't say he was a ninja. Like, I don't know what rank. Yeah, I guess maybe when you get your black belt, you actually are a ninja. I don't know.
Shokasugi style. Lee Van Cleef style.
But, yeah, I was like, dude, I hope you don't ever try to use that in a real fight because that ain't going to work good. But speaking of ninjas, I did see a real samurai the other day.
I told you about this fella, didn't I?
I thought Cam was making this up. So, you know,
I've been known.
I only listen to about 20% of what Cam tells me. The rest I know is complete bullshit. Anyways, he told me about this guy that lives in our small town that walks around in a kimono and carries a samurai sword. Cam knows the house. He knows exactly where the guy lives.
I've seen him train in his front yard.
That's what he claims. So the other day I was driving down a main street in our town about to get gas. And I see this guy. And I'm like, whoa, Cam, I see a guy in a kimono carrying a samurai sword.
Yeah, he's actually called me. He's talking to me at the time that the sighting took place.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I told you about that guy like a couple months ago. And I was like, yeah, you did. But I didn't think
he comes
serious.
Clean to tell me. I thought you was full of shit. I thought he was messing with me.
No, I saw this guy. So I don't know if this guy's like slightly off his rocker or if this guy
is completely sane. Who wouldn't do that?
He's one of these guys that, you know, dress up like a superhero and they're like not vigilantes, but they actually go out and try to help citizens and protect them from being mugged or raped or beaten. Maybe this guy's out doing good during the coronavirus. He feels compelled
to help the city,
to walk the streets, even though it was like 11 a.m. with
he's been up all night
with a samurai sword. But dude, this guy looked legit.
If I have been by his place,
I got to get a photograph. I got to get an interview with this guy
where he is in the front. He was at the front yard or in the front yard of his house
practicing on one of those wooden dummies.
He actually had the sword out.
Oh geez.
And he was practicing with the sword. And then he's got the wooden knockoff, you know, your practice sword. I forgot the technical term. I'm sure I'll get 30 emails on that.
Was it kendo or something?
Yeah. But anyway, whatever. He's got one of those. So he practiced in the front yard. Like, dude, he's,
You saw targets where he was practicing shurikens?
I'm sure he's got them in the backyard. I'm sure he does. But I mean, like, and all jokes aside, I kind of pulled over. The dude ain't bad with the sword, man. Like, you could put him in a movie right now.
I think this dude's legit. I was hoping he would throw down one of those smoke bombs and just see a puff of smoke and then he wouldn't be there no more.
He would go, hood, and he'd start spinning and spinning a circle, go down to the ground like that one we watched. What was where he buried himself? Revenge of the Ninja?
Something. I know the actor's name was Shokasugi.
He's been in all the good ninja movies, but I'm talking about where the one overtakes the girl's body. Remember where they're chasing him across the golf course?
Yeah.
She's possessed by the evil ninja spirit.
Man, I forgot about that movie. That's a great movie. What was the other one? Was it American Ninja, where it was always the white guy?
The white guy.
And the black guy that were, and they would go to.
First of all, the first American Ninja was was a white dude. But then the other one that you're talking about too was an American Ninja where he was in the military. Remember, he puts a bucket on his head, go ahead and hit me, and then he grabbed him.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. And they go to like Manuel Noriega's compound, and for whatever reason, there's like a rodeo arena, and there's a real ninja there that's gonna sword fight everybody.
It's Shokasugi.
And that, man, now you're making me want. I'm gonna have to go check that out and see if I can. You know find what we need to
do?
Rent.
We're gonna do it. We're gonna start doing like our take. Our hot take on like childhood movies that we love.
There you like reaction videos.
Reaction video. Yeah.
Dude, we should totally do
that. We're going to do that on like crazy old kung fu movies like that and like movies like we need to rewatch Rawhead Rex.
Yeah. Things. Now you're onto something.
Say, we're going to do it. We're going to start putting it on YouTube.
Did you see Dana White's act that Fight Island is a real thing?
Well, they canceled it now.
Well, I know, but he's purchasing an island to do it. Here's the thing. I don't understand because apparently
that's going to turn into like the old Bruce Lee movie right there.
The Octagon.
Enter the Dragon. Stuff.
Yeah, it's going
to
be.
Where you got to go to his island and fight.
It's going to be awesome.
Can you imagine if they like a island that's nothing but where the fights take place?
I think it sounds like an incredibly good idea.
Where's it going to be?
I don't know. I'm assuming like the Caribbean somewhere.
That sounds pretty awesome. I'm not going to lie. Dude. So maybe we can get the samurai dude. I would like to talk to the guy, but I'm probably afraid for a real good reason.
I'm talking about, I think I can hook him up with a membership at Neanderthal Fight Company. And I would like to see that guy get and start training with real people.
I don't know if we can handle it.
He can have a seminar. He could give a seminar
of sword fighting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I would like to sword fight. Like
I would not. I was going to say,
swords,
I'm not going to lie.
Fake swords, not real swords. Oh. Like I told you, there's nothing more scary than me than seeing those, like hearing those about those machete attacks. No, dude, that stuff freaks me out.
Yeah, no. I would much rather have somebody pull a gun on me than they would a samurai sword. Like I'm just going to be straight up. Yeah, right. There's a lot of other ways I'd like to meet my end. Samurai sword is not one.
Like we said, I don't want to be shot with a bow and arrow. Like I don't want to be. Like the last white guy since Custer to take one. I'm like, dude, I'm not about that life.
I was going to pick up a gallon of milk and a loaf of bread at Dollar General. Now I'm in feudal Japan.
That's right.
What is going on?
The Shogun has sent somebody after me.
Well, let's get into some news, folks. Check this out. This was sent in to us by a listener named Jared. He said, okay, so my family and I moved into an old house around 6 or 7 years ago. And for a year or two, everything was normal. However, when my little brother was born, strange things started happening around the house.
I hate it when that happens.
I remember walking into the kitchen one day after school to get a glass of water, and I happened to look over towards the basement door. Right at the entrance leading down into the basement, I saw a huge black figure that was probably 4 feet wide and 6 feet tall. I remember looking at the figure for 30 seconds, and then I looked away to grab my glass of water, almost forgetting that I was still pouring it. And when I went to look back, the figure was gone. Now, later that evening, I told my stepdad about the experience that I had a few hours earlier. And he looked at me with a shocked look on his face. And he said that he saw it too, a couple days ago, early in the morning, standing in the exact same spot. Now, we both still can't explain what it was, and it scares us even to this day. But we haven't seen it since. Thanks for all you do, Jared.
So nope.
Right? That's
big
creepy.
Big bag of nope.
4 foot wide and 6 feet tall. It's like Brock Lesnar.
That's like you saw the shadow of like a sheet of plywood.
So the shadow of George the Animal Steel.
That's right.
I don't know. I mean, it didn't do anything to him, but how frightening. And I like the part where he talked to his stepdad and he was like, yeah, I saw it too.
I've got something here that you're going to think is extremely creepy.
Okay, that's
comes from Native Ghost Stories, and it doesn't say who actually wrote this, but you're going to like this. So it took place in northern Alabama on April 20th of 2014. says, I woke up around 3 a.m. and couldn't go back to sleep. So I sat up quietly waiting for my kids to wake up and discover their Easter baskets. Right around 6 a.m., I hear my youngest son squeal in delight. I knew it. I knew he was real. Oh, my God, everyone come look. At this time, I've jumped up out of bed and started for his room to see what was going on. When I opened the door, he was looking out of his window towards the woods. So I asked him what the commotion was all about, and he would say that that was the Easter Bunny, and he was looking in his window. Now, the window in my son's room is 5.5 feet off the ground, and of course, I'm confused. So I asked him to describe exactly what he saw. So he told me he woke up to see a giant black bunny staring at him, and he could see him from the shoulders up. And by my calculations, would make this bunny about 10 feet tall with ears. Now, my son said that when he locked eyes with this bunny and squealed, the bunny turned around and hopped away towards the well house. And that's when I walked into the room. Now, my son isn't one to just make up some kind of crazy story, so I really believe he saw something. But I do not believe that he saw a 10-foot Easter rabbit. So I had to talk to the shaman, and he thinks that my son saw a shapeshifter.
Or perhaps, you know, it was something like a Sasquatch or something, and the kid just thought it was a rabbit.
Or perhaps it was a giant bunny.
It is possible, it being Easter. Happy Easter, folks. But I will say that Luke told me he saw a wereman one time behind our fence.
And the boys, the boys, remember the boys talking about it? Maybe they really did see it.
A wereman, according to them, this is all, this is the story they told me, is where like a werewolf is normally a man and he turns into a wolf. This is where it's a wolf. Sometimes it turns into a man.
Yeah.
They saw one and they heard it growling and howling and everything behind the back fence. So, you know, I don't know, did the kid really see that? Or was he just overactive imagination?
I believe he really
saw it. If he saw a giant 10-foot tall black rabbit, though, that would be pretty scary.
Yeah.
Remember the one in the Search for the Holy Grail? Like, look at its teeth. And remember the rabbit was flying around, biting everyone's throat out?
Yeah. And what is the other one? Donnie Darko?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Donnie Darko's got the big rabbit in it. Yeah.
Mm.
What is it about people seeing big rabbits? Like, why is that a thing, right?
I don't know. What is it about people seeing flying humanoids?
Oh, here we go.
Check this out. Now, this is absolutely not going to help anybody listening to this, but if you are interested, I will put links in the show notes. You can go over there and check out these YouTube videos. Now, this first video was sent in to MUFON, and it was the report. Cam, get out your pen.
I'm ready.
It's case number 107093. Now, this report, it says, came in on March 22nd. Over Phoenix, Arizona. Now, the witness says, we first noticed it while sitting in our backyard, the black object moving slowly from northeast to southwest, a very strange shape, looking like a figure with wings. My wife commented that it looked like a giant bumblebee. We used binoculars and videotaped it. Then we confirmed the odd shape, looking like the object was spinning as it was moving. It was an overcast evening, but the object was very defined and black. The clouds were moving in the opposite direction. No noise could be heard. Moving under the clouds about a mile up, the object looked like a giant transformer. Cam, are you interested in watching this?
This sounds insane.
Like, look at that thing. Is that incredible? That's not the only one. What? Apparently, just a couple days later, this happened over Plymouth County in Massachusetts, which it says is it's part of the Boston metropolitan area. These people, too. I got a video here where they filmed a flying humanoid. Now, these people said the object flew parallel to our heads. I would say no further than the length of a football field away from us. I saw it that it was about the size of a helicopter, if not larger, but we couldn't tell what it was. That is why I took my camera out and began filming. By the time I got my phone out, the object had already begun accelerating away from us. While it may appear to be hovering in the video, it is actually traveling forward at a great deal of speed. I could see the shape of the structure clearly and could see the ovular shaped black orb and what appeared to be a caterpillar like tail. As I stated, the craft came close enough to us that I could distinguish only two things. One, that there was no visible human navigating this device, and two, that I've never seen anything like this before.
No joke.
Right?
But No joke.
I mean, look at this. Look, this is a video of it. Do you see it in the sky up there?
See,
it looks man-shaped.
It's man-shaped, but I like how it's just feet point towards the ground. It's just like it's just standing in the air, aggravated about something.
Floating around, flying around, accelerating. The video they provide, you don't really see it doing any of that.
But it is man-shaped.
Yeah, the first story, the guy said it looks like a transformer.
I love, like a bumblebee.
Yeah. When he said it looked like a bumblebee, I'm thinking of like an actual bee.
That's what I was thinking.
I think he's referring to Bumblebee the Transformer. The
Transformer, yeah. But I'm thinking the same thing. Like, that's something that would be insane, is if you saw a giant bumblebee. Like, I wonder if there's giant...
Like those Japanese hornets or
yeah,
whatever?
But I'm talking like a three-footer. Like, you imagine seeing like one that's like a meter-long bumblebee? Dude, I don't think so.
But there's been sightings like this over the years.
Yes.
And I've watched dozens of videos on it. Here's the other one I was telling you about. And they... It is... Where it looks like a man-shaped thing, not really moving, but just kind of gliding around. Is this somebody with some kind of crazy suit that takes
But they up? Don't stand... Yeah, well, that's the other thing, is it doesn't look like it's flying like Superman flies. It looks like it's gliding around standing upright.
I know. Or is it somebody that's created some kind of drone, that thing's got a prop coming out of the top of it like a propeller on a helicopter. The guy flies it around and people take film of it, video it. And it's not a humanoid. It's the size of my body armor drink here.
But, it would have to be rather large in order to be able
like
to see it.
These people are standing just like in a park.
Yeah. Looks like on a soccer field looking up at it.
When the guy says he could tell it wasn't human controlled, I'm assuming he means that it didn't look like a person up there. You can't tell me that somebody from the ground can't be controlling that.
Oh,
you'll never get me to believe that.
Of course they could.
I've seen what you can do with our drone.
Yeah. So, of course, you could, yeah. But still, it doesn't explain it. It doesn't.
I told you, my brother's the world's biggest flying humanoid fan.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very
true.
He's
the one that first turned me on to it. And in Mexico, they call them witches.
Yep.
Which is odd.
That's very, very true, though. I know how much he loves those damn things.
Right? What? Go ahead.
I've got one story here before we jump off into the little people for the day. And on the Elite Show, I had covered some crazy tales in Kentucky. And this comes from another one. And I remember this coming up. And I believe you and I discussed this a while back. But this is just something quick because of the things that they've seen in Kentucky. This actually took place in Murray, Kentucky, several years ago in Callaway County, where a woman reported seeing because now, don't forget, we've been talking about dog man, but then you start talking about, like, remember we talked about coyotes. How come we don't see coyotes or panthers? We see goat men. People talk about seeing goats. This is a pig-like bipedal animal 11 miles from the town of Murray. Folks, this comes from Cryptozoology News, believe it or not. And it says, Kentuckying Patty reports that she was on her way home driving on Highway 94 when she spotted this creature in the plain daylight. She was quoted saying that, I was in my little red Mercury Bobcat, and I saw a tall, slender creature on the side of the road. This encounter took place, if you couldn't tell by the Mercury Bobcat reference, back in 1983. Now, she claims that this unidentified animal had jumped out of a field that had a crop in it just 50 feet away from her vehicle and ran across the road, she says, like a gorilla. Now, she says that she got out of the car and for some reason, oh, hold on, I'm jumping past this. Now, he says that it was using, or she says, its arms and legs, and it was headed over to like a swampy area by Kentucky Lake. She says that she jumped out and yelled at this creature and that it stopped and turned around and looked straight at her. And she says that's when fear sank in and she jumped back in the Bobcat and locked the doors. She said, I waited for a few minutes while the creature was still visible. This was rush hour, but the odd thing is that there were no other vehicles in sight. So it should be really busy on the highway. Right. There's nothing around.
She slipped into a parallel dimension or something?
Maybe. What she said she was hoping is that somebody would drive by so she could flag them down and say, do you see that too? Now, she described this thing as being 7 foot tall, hairless, all hairless, y'all, with pink skin, a long torso, arms, hands similar to that to a human with short legs. Its neck was longer than a human's, and it held a small head with pointy ears. And she said the face looked like it had intelligent eyes and a pig-like snout. Now, how terrible does this thing sound?
Holy cow.
A large, hairless, pig-snouted monstrosity that says she believes that this was a young one and that it reminded her of a teenager, mischievous but not harmful. She goes on to say that I would describe it as a cross between a primate, a pig, and a human. And as soon as she got home, she told her husband about what had happened. And, of course, he didn't take her serious.
No. Imagine somebody comes home and tells you that story.
She says that he thought I was crazy, but I know what I saw.
Which is the title of a book. I just did a book review on YouTube.
I know what I saw. That's
very
right.
Crazy. It sounds like, to me, something that was created in a lab, a secret lab. I'm picturing Nazi scientists working with the American government.
Why do Illuminati. I like that idea? I love that idea.
I don't know either. Using CRISPR and they're trying to clone humans with pig like animals, and this was the offspring, and it somehow it got loose. Well, like I don't know. I like that idea, but that, I mean,
like I told you, I always think when I think of the pig stuff as the original movie Swamp Thing.
Mm.
I you think about those crosses with the animals, and that's kind of what they're doing.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
That's another one we need to do on the video.
Yeah. We're going to get to it.
Sure.
But let's get into the segment, Cam. I know for y'all that are listening to the show, and you especially, Cam, you know that I'm a big fan of the Giants. But what if I was to tell you that here in America, long, long ago, not only was there a race of giants, but there also was a race of little people,
mm-hmm.
like dwarves. And that's what I'm going to be talking about. So let's get into that. It is a well-known fact that history is always written by the winners. The whole history of mankind has numerous unknown facts, which, or never, or at best, only partially contained in today's textbooks. Researchers, historians, and everyday people like you must therefore dig very deep into the old archives in order to bring the real truth to light. The problem here is that the manipulated and falsified knowledge of history has been so anchored in our understanding of the world that all facts and information that run counter to these simple beliefs, most of which are based on lies, are simply rejected by the masses because they lack the knowledge of what our real history as a species truly is. It's not your fault you've never heard of what I'm about to speak about. Hell, your own teachers, professors, and parents probably aren't aware of the truth either. They too were lied to. That is why more and more alternative researchers, listeners of fine podcasts, and enlightened people are asking themselves, what is actually going on here? Why was and is the truth being manipulated and falsified? And who is responsible for all this? Since facts and information that have been kept secret up to now are now constantly being uncovered, one can only surmise that there has been a historical cover-up. But even today, it continues, because one cannot simply deviate from it now. All history books would have to be rewritten. All the real knowledge and secret archaeological discoveries made all over the world fall under the secrecy of fringe science. These discoveries are so sensitive, they are completely excluded from normal research and reporting. An important part of these historical secrets are those of the ancient giants and dwarves of North America. If you haven't heard of it, don't be surprised, because the existence of human giants and dwarves in the Earth's past is one of the best-kept secrets in history. Believe it or not, in the time of the first European settlers in North America, thousands of old pyramid-shaped burial mounds were discovered all over the country, and these graves often contain the skeletons of human giants up to 12 feet tall. And also dwarves, only 3 feet in height. The reason why it is no longer reported after the 19th century was that these giants and dwarves in no way fit into the pattern of traditional human evolution. Any researcher who nevertheless dared to report on it was discredited or lost his job. The notions of real giants or dwarves did not fit into the image of socially accepted knowledge. Today, there is almost no mention of these giants or dwarves in any textbook throughout the world. But they are still mentioned in numerous ancient writings and included also in the Bible and the Quran. On today's show, I'm going to be covering the discovery of real dwarves or pygmies that once lived in North America. Let's begin. So before I begin, some of you are going to be thinking, Kyle, where in the hell did you find out about all these dwarves? And I've actually been interested in the subject for many years. If you've listened to the show since the beginning, you've known that I've reported on giants in North America more than once. I'm a big fan of Jim Vieira and some other guys as well, Richard Dewhurst, and especially Fritz Zimmerman. He's got a book out called The Encyclopedia of Ancient Giants in North America, and he's done an incredible job of researching the archives to find these sightings, and that's what I'm going to be reading from today. But I'm only going to be focusing on these grave sites of dwarves. And if there is any language that are in these articles that you find offensive, I apologize. I'm reading it as it was written when these articles appeared, and a lot of these are from a long time ago, early in the 19th century, towards the end of the 19th century. So let's get into this first one. This comes from the state of Pennsylvania. Now, this article was printed in the Charlotte Democrat, which is, of course, Charlotte, North Carolina. And this occurred on May 21st, 1896, and the article is titled, A Race of Ancient Pygmies, Remarkable Discovery of More Than 20 Skeletons. It says, Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, on May 14th, Mr. John Lapping plowed up a lot of bones on his farm. 3 miles southeast of here last year, and again this spring. The skeletons were the size of a child. L.W. Sayers, a shoe merchant, advanced a theory that the grave was not that of a child, but contained the remains of one of a race of pygmies. He succeeded in arousing the interest of a Professor Waycroft of Waynesburg College, a Mr. W.L. Allison, a Mr. Edward Stout, Norval Zook, Haynes Reinhardt, a Mr. Thomas Finch, and photographer B.S. Sayers. In company with those gentlemen, Mr. Sayers opened 20 graves on a knoll in front of Mr. Lapping's house. The graves were arranged in the segment of a circle, nearly 400 feet in diameter. They were elliptical holes dug in the earth and covered by smooth slabs of sandstone. The cavities under these slabs were 9 to 10 inches deep. The slabs were found uniformly 10 inches below the surface. The skeletons had been placed in the graves unprotected by the masonry. The head had been bent forward slightly over the breast, and the limbs had been drawn up. The body, evidently, had been placed partly on the right side, and in every instance the face had been turned to the east. The average length of the skeleton was 18 inches. The length of the head, 6 inches. Spinal column, 9 inches. Forearm, 3 1/4 inches. In one of the graves was found a volume bound in a deerskin, in which was written the following. It said, John T. Kent, born in 1749. The 17th day of October, 1796, I, John Kent, while digging a hole in the new clearing for the purpose of planting an apple tree, accidentally uncovered a human skeleton, about 3 feet in length. Believing in the final resurrection of the body, as well as the son, I carefully replaced the stone over the grave and planted the tree at the head of the grave. Rest in peace, ye mankind of ancient days, ye former guardian of the forest land. Thy bones shall be removed. So, I guess apparently this person was plowing in their field. This is what happened a lot. So, like, when the first settlers came here, they would find these stone walls, stone hinges even, these mounds. And as, you know, westward expansion happened, these farmers would acquire new land and they'd begin plowing and turning and tilling the earth. And they would come across these graves. And in the, according to this, I don't want you to be confused, the deer skin bound book they found wasn't talking about the pygmy or the dwarf was born in 1749. Apparently, somebody else, prior to the guy that was working his land, a guy named John Kent accidentally stumbled upon the grave of this pygmy, and he felt bad for disturbing it, and so he put in there a deerskin-bound book talking about when he found it and what it was there for. I guess, you know, the foresight that somebody might accidentally find it. Pretty cool. Moving over to the state of Ohio. This comes from the Centennial History of Coshocton County, Ohio, Volume 1, 1909. It says, the skeletons reduced to chalky ashes were 3 to 4.5 feet long, smaller than Indian or mound skeletons. These pygmies have led to much conjecture. Thus far, no definite conclusion is recorded in any of the notices of this ancient city of the dead. The bibliography of Ohio Earthworks, prepared for the Smithsonian Institution, includes the notice in Howe's Historical Collections, quoted from Dr. Hildreth's description in Silliman's Journal, 1835. This also mentions an ancient cemetery of pygmies near the town of St. Louis. There are skeletons there that were found in these stone sepulchres, while those here seem to have been in wooden coffins. A discovery of pygmy graves on the Keene-Bethlehem Township line was credited to a Mr. J.C. Mulligan. The long rows of graves of the pygmy race at Coshocton were regularly arranged with heads to the west, a circumstance which has given rise to the theory that these people were sun worshippers, facing the daily approach of the sun god over the eastern hills. In this respect, however, there is no resemblance to the various positions of skeletons found in these mounds. Acceptance of the sun worship surmise does not necessarily imply a deduction that this pygmy race may have descended from the river people of Hindostan or even Egypt. Primeval man, wherever found, seems to have been a sun worshiper. Man, pretty cool. But moving on, not just in Ohio, West Virginia. In the Chronicles of Border Warfare in West Virginia, titled 1895, it says, in this state, too, have been found burying grounds in which the skeletons seem all to have been those of pygmies. The graves in which the bodies had been deposited were seldom 3 feet in length, yet the teeth and the skulls prove that they were the bodies of persons of a mature age. Upon the whole, there cannot be much doubt that America was once inhabited by a people not otherwise allied to the Indians of the present day, than that they were descendants of him, from whom has sprung the whole human family. Well, that's a pretty interesting description. Again in West Virginia, History of Fayette County, West Virginia, 1926. It says, within the village of Brownstone, 10 miles above Charleston, and just below the mouth of Lenz Creek, is another such burying ground. Some time ago, two skeletons were found together here, one of a huge framed, about 7 feet in length, and the other of a deformed dwarf of about 4 feet in length. So in this case, there's a giant found buried with a dwarf. Now, this is not a rare occurrence for whatever reason. It seems to be at that time there was a population of Native Americans. And when they got here, apparently there was already a race of giants living in North America and already a race of dwarves living in North America. Now, what's confusing is sometimes the dwarves are found buried by themselves. And likewise, sometimes giants are found buried by themselves. But there's an awful lot of cases where there's giants found buried with normal sized humans and sometimes buried with dwarves. So it's confusing. I don't know if, like, say, the giant had three normal-sized Homo sapien wives, or perhaps they took a dwarf or pygmy as a wife or a servant, and they were buried together, perhaps, I don't know, to serve the giant, the master, in the afterlife. There's no real, I don't have an understanding of it, but it is common for a giant to be found buried with either a normal-sized person or a dwarf or pygmy. Moving on to the state of Illinois, this comes from the St. Louis Republic, November 29th, 1903. Now, this one in particular speaks of a giant. It's titled Skeleton of a Giant. Now, Harrisburg, Illinois, while digging a well on the old Inman factory lot near Shawneetown, a few days ago, Sanford K. Jenkins unearthed several skeletons of an old and also some old Indian relics. In a space 8 feet square, Jenkins took out 14 skeletons and 6 vessels of different sizes. One peculiar and remarkable thing about the skeletons were their size. One skeleton was that of a giant, which measured fully 8 feet in height, while right near this one was found the skull of an adult not larger than that of a four-year-old child, and was perhaps the remains of an ancient pygmy. While the ground is near the old Indian mound, and it's supposed to have been the burying ground of the Indians in earlier days, it is thought by some of the older citizens that they were buried over 1,000 years ago, before the Indians and Native Americans inhabited this country. Moving on to the state of Tennessee. Now, Tennessee, for whatever reason, has a large number of dwarfs and pygmies that are found in that particular state. There's a lot of giants and dwarves that were found all over the Ohio Valley. I'm not complaining that if you've ever driven through that area, it's a beautiful place. It's no wonder that they settled there. And even in Fritz's book, he details almost 1,000 different cases of giants or pygmies, but they aren't in every state. They're only in 47, which is almost the entire United States. But anyways, to Tennessee, this comes from the Natural and Aboriginal History of Tennessee, published in 1823. It says a small number of skeletons were discovered a few miles from Sparta, Tennessee, in White County, an account of which was given by a Mr. Lane. The graves found were about 2 feet in length and 14 inches broad and 16 inches deep. These extend promiscuously through the farm of a Mr. Lane and in a large and closely connected burying ground that's located in the vicinity. There were others of the same description, 4 miles south of Sparta, and it is said that hundreds of them might be found throughout the county. There is no discernible rising on the surface of the earth on account of these graves, and they were found by sinking an iron rod into the ground until it struck the covering stone of the coffins. These graves generally contained small skeletons of human beings, but so much decayed they could not be removed without being broken into pieces or crumbling into dust. There were also found in them the remnants of pottery and shells, as well as bones of animals. In one skeleton, that laid on its back with the feet drawn up so as to raise the knees about 4 inches above the bottom of the grave. The head was also so raised as to cause the chin to lie upon the breast. This skeleton, carefully measured as it lay, was found to be from a little below the ankle joints to the top of the skull, 2 feet, 10 inches, making a proper allowance for the bending of the legs and the inclination of the head. But one grave of the whole series was of a larger size and of a different form, being constructed after the manner of a coffin, 14 inches broad at the head, 22 at the elbow, and 10 at the foot. The sides and ends were of flagstones, the same as those of the small graves. In this grave lay a skeleton 5 foot 5 inches long, the head to the west and the feet to the east. This skeleton was carefully uncovered without displacing any of the bones until the whole was exposed to view. Its mouth was wide open and contained a full set of teeth. The arms lay along the side. The ribs were broad and flat and more than double the size of those of the pygmies. The head was also much larger, the eyes wider apart, and the forehead higher than those in the smaller graves. The skull was perfect, with the exception of a fracture on the right cheekbone, and a quantity of fine, straight hair adhered to it, which was of a bright gray. No vessels or trinkets were found with this skeleton, and from the great dissimilarity in the shape of the head and the size and form of the bones, it seemed to belong to a different tribe from the skeletons of the smaller graves. From the great number of small graves found here, says Mr. Lane, all have the same description, and among them all, but one being of a large size. It seems to indicate that there was in ancient times a race of people whose height was from 2 feet 10 to 3 feet. As old as the hair of a large skeleton seemed to be, there was not a tooth lost or an unsound in either jaw. But one of the pygmy heads had in the upper jaw a decayed tooth. whence it was conjectured that the person to whom the skeleton belonged was older than the former. Specimens of the contents of these graves were submitted to the medical gentlemen of Nashville, and various opinions were entertained as to the maturity or the infancy of the smaller skeletons. The prevailing one seemed to be that these skeletons belonged to adult persons of a small size, and also that some of the bones found were those of animals, natural and aboriginal history of Tennessee. In another publication, Queens County Sentinel, August 3rd, 1893, the title of the article is Dwarf Americans. It says the Smithsonian Institution has undertaken a peculiar work in this locality. This people of the world have paid lengthy visits to that hilly country known as East Tennessee, have always been impressed with the sublimity and beauty of the mountains, the simplicity and superstition of the inhabitants, and the general air of sleepy mysteriousness surrounding everything. Ask one of these people where they would most expect to find a race of dwarfs or giants, and the reply will be, in East Tennessee. And recent developments seem to bear them out. For the last few years, the remains of people less than 3 feet in height have been discovered in this country. On the eastern slope of one of the peaks of the Great Smoky Mountains, where the first rays of the morning sun strike, is an ancient burying ground. And such another burying place could not be found, though the world would be searched. For not one grave is more than 3 feet long. The tombs are 3 feet below the surface and are formed of cement and flat stones, and have defied the ravages of time to cause them to be destroyed. Most of those examined contained a vase and a few beads and human skeletons, which was never more than 36 inches long and was that of a full-grown person. The native have a beautiful legend of the place and say none were interred herewith except for children, while naturalists claim that the skulls to have reached their full growth. But the most interesting account is that of the red men who held that country when first settled by the whites. They claimed that when they came into that section of the country, it was peopled by a race of small, fierce men with red hair, that these dwarfs waged a long and bloody war with the Indians, but were finally all killed, that this burying ground was used long before they came into the country. Wow, I really like that description. And one thing that stands out to me is the red hair. Because if you know or are familiar with the Lovelock Caves, that's a story where Native Americans actually fought with red-haired giants. So this is red-haired dwarves. Very, very interesting. Moving on to the state of Missouri. The Cook County Herald, October 24th, 1903. The article is titled Prehistoric Cemetery. It says, workmen terracing King Hill, an old landmark of the northwestern Missouri, which is to be converted into a residential suburb of St. Joseph, have unearthed a prehistoric cemetery. The remains of a race of dwarfs, not allied with any tribe known to have inhabited this territory, and unaccounted for by Indian legendary repose on the summit of King Hill. A feature remarkable in and of itself, and especially marked in connection with the dwarfish remnants of a prehistoric man found on the summit, is the discovery of human bones, evidently those of a giant, probably more than 7 feet tall and being big-boned, low flat heads with small intelligence and marked animal propensities characterized these people. Heavy jaws and strong, well-preserved teeth carry the records of their lives forward. Brutes, human, but not inhumane, self-reliant, they are savages of a lower order than are known today. Yet they honored their dead. Shells, such are found on the banks of many inland streams, plentiful on the sandbars of the Missouri, overlooked by King Hill, and the stones of unusual hues, worthless in the commercial marts of today, the playthings of children, were deposited in the graves. Moving on to South Dakota. This comes from the Los Angeles Times, August 4th, 1907. Again, this one's titled Find Prehistoric Graveyard. It says, Oklahoma, August 3rd. A remarkable prehistoric burying ground has been cut into by the railroad graders east of Oklahoma. And the remains of what appears to be a pygmy race have been discovered. The old burying ground is now a great deposit of gravel, and it is in this that the bodies are found. In the neighborhood of 50 skeletons have so far been unearthed. These are all of a race of dwarfs, about 4 feet tall, and the physicians have pronounced them the remains of adults, not children. The burials took place with the bodies standing or sitting, not lying down. One of the skeletons is that of a giant, more than 8 feet tall. Near the giant skeleton were found a number of copper implements, as well as several of bone. In one of the graves were two copper idols, about 8 inches tall. The University of South Dakota is expected to send an archaeologist to investigate the find. Here's another one. This was published in the South Dakota Country, 1922. It claims, while on their journey up the Missouri, Captains Lewis and Clark, with 10 men, stopped in what is now Clay County, South Dakota, to visit a mound in the midst of a flat prairie. Now, this mound was about 900 feet long, more than 180 feet wide, and 70 feet high, with a top as smooth and as level as the plain from which the mound rose. Now, the Native Americans called this mountain of the Little People, or Little Spirits. The Lewis and Clark Journal says that the Indians believe that this is the abode of evil spirits in human form, about 18 inches high, with a remarkably large heads. They are armed with sharp arrows, with which they are very skillful, and are always on the watch to kill those who have had the hardihood to approach their residence. The tradition is that many have suffered from these little evil spirits, and among others, three Maha or Omaha Indians fell to sacrifice to them a few years back. This has inspired all of the neighboring nations with such terror that no consideration could tempt them to visit the hill. We saw none of these wicked little spirits, nor any place for them, except some small holes scattered over the top. So how cool is that, man? Lewis and Clark actually bumped in some Native Americans. They asked them what was going on, and they told them about this race of dwarves or pygmies that were very skillful with bow and arrow, that were tenacious, they were evil. I mean, it sounds like something out of a Tolkien movie. It sounds like something from Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones. It's cool. Let's move to New Mexico. Check this out. This from the Colonist, Volume 9, October 21st, 1912. It's titled 18-Inch Mummy. It says an ancient mummy, 18 inches high, in a good state of preservation, has been found at the cliff dwellings on the Upper Gila, near Silver City, New Mexico. An instruction have been received to forward it to the Smithsonian Institution at Washington. Careful examination confirms the idea of many scientists that the old cliff men were of a dwarf race. The most striking features of their dwellings were very small doorways and extremely low ceilings. This one comes from the Spokane Daily Chronicle, January 9th, 1936. It says, these crumbling ruins of a long-perished city, where mummified human forms revealed that 7-foot giants and 3-foot pygmies apparently lived together, and they were found by Paxson C. Hayes, ethnologist, who has spent the last 7 years exploring the upland plains and wastes of northern Mexico. The architecture is of a type never before discovered, resembling that of a cliff dwelling, but with distinct Mongolian features. The strange civilization is believed to antedate that of the Mayans. Hayes plans an expedition for a thorough search of the huge caves in Sonora, 400 miles from Hermosillo City. So, if you're familiar with Mesa Verde in Colorado, where these Anasazi, like structures are built into the cliff where they were living, it's kind of like this. But in this example, there's giants and pygmies living here. Pretty cool. How about in Arizona? That's right. This comes from a newspaper there in December 31st, 1915, and it's titled Probably an Ancient Cowboy. It says Hans, Augustus, and James Hansen, as well as Leo Ellsworth, returned Monday from White River, where they had been the past 6 weeks hauling wood for the Indian Agency. They report the finding of a skeleton of a horned man. That's right, horned folks. The skeleton was 3 feet tall, with well-defined horns about 2 inches long near the temples. The skeleton was found near the East Fork of the White River, close to a large cave. It was a fully developed man and was on exhibition at Whitewater several days before being sent to a museum in Washington City. This comes from the Snowflake Herald. So you might be saying, what? Yeah, this actually is not the first account of finding not just a dwarf or pygmy, but also giants and having horns on their head. This is the first time I've heard of a dwarf with horns, though. So that's pretty cool. And if you think I'm crazy, I mean, you can do a Google search. There was one that was found, a really cool one that was found like in Pennsylvania, like in Syre or somewhere like that. And this skeleton has horns. Pretty cool. Here's another one from Arizona. This comes from the Border City Star on March 20th, 1923. It says, Cliff Dweller skeleton declared that of a pygmy. Check this out. Prescott, Arizona, March 20th. Scientists who will visit Prescott next summer to attempt to fathom the mystery of the ancient cliff dwelling on the Verde River will be asked to give their attention to a skeleton found recently by Morrison Howell Payne, ranchers living a few miles north of this city. Although the skeleton is apparently no larger than that of a child of 4 or 5 years, the skull contains a fully developed set of mature teeth. The Payne brothers unearthed the skeletons while excavating. Tiny doorways and low ceilings seemed to bear out the theory that the people living there were of a small stature. But the dwarf-like skeleton is so much smaller than that of a man of today that it has created another of those archaeological problems which it is the purpose of the National Geography Society to solve. It is possible, in a series of expeditions next summer, for a road in Granite Dells, a vast granite formation near Prescott. Digging carefully, they were able to extradite practically all of the bones without breaking them. The skeleton has excited a lively interest on account of the size and of the maturity of the teeth and of the skull bones, which one physician said showed none of the evidence of immaturity of an infant's cranium, meaning it was an adult. Prints of the hands of the builders of the well-preserved prehistoric dwelling known as Montezuma's Castle are still seen in the mud-like mortar holding the stones together, and these prints indicate that the dwellers were persons with very small hands. Man, that's so cool, right? What do you think of that? Not only do they find the bones, not only are they finding the structures, they're even finding small childlike handprints in the mortar that's left over by whatever group of people built this. Very cool. A key role in the cover-up of the North American giants and of the dwarves was played by the American Smithsonian Institution, now headed by the government and military. Now, the institution's archaeologists have removed hundreds, if not thousands, of the giant and dwarf skeletons from these mounds and tombs. I've even heard stories of the Smithsonian actually loading ships full of these ancient bones and dumping all of them into the ocean so that nobody will ever find them. I think it's important to remember that these ancient species created whole cities long before the first Indians appeared in North America. Until the beginning of the 20th century, it was regularly reported in the newspapers of that time, even in papers like the New York Times. Now, many of the giants' large stone sites show similarities to numerous ancient megalith sites all over the world. All these buildings were designed according to precise astronomical and mathematical criteria, which is also completely ignored by school and science today. So, where did this knowledge come from? Who were these giants and these dwarves, and where did they come from? They did not get along with other Native American tribes, and it's told that they were battled with them and eventually were all killed and destroyed. Man, how cool would it be to go back in time, you know, in some sort of time machine, and see what it was like to live among real giants and real dwarves. I think it's time we stop pretending that we know everything and take a good hard look at our real past so that we don't make the same mistakes our ancestors did. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And so I hope you enjoyed that.
Of course I enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite topics.
Mine too. And it's crazy to me that, you know, like I brought up, that this is not talked about. Like, none of my history teachers ever told me this. You were told the very generic story, like you learned from watching Peanuts, the Charlie Brown cartoon, that like the Pilgrims came over on a boat. You know, and Christopher Columbus landed, and they had a big feast, and them and the Native Americans, they all were buddies.
They all got along till at one point in time, then they kind of fought a little bit.
Then we started the 13 colonies, yeah. And then, you know, westward expansion happened, and there was all types of things, and as we progressed across the West, we demoralized the Native Americans, we put them in these reservations, and that was there's no talk when I was taught history. There was no talk that, oh, yeah, there was giants living here long ago, you know, way before Columbus, there was a race of giants here. Yeah. The Bible talks about them. They were persecuted and fled and probably came to the New World long ago. And then, oh yeah, there was also like dwarves living here, pygmies, small people. And the fact that there are giants found buried with dwarves, meaning they were together. No one ever told me that story. Never, not even once, not one time did I ever think that giants were a real thing. And yeah, there's not just like one or two were found. There's hundreds and thousands, hundreds of thousands, hundreds and thousands of documented reports. Now, if there's that many, how many farmers were plowing their field, found a grave, and just, you know, moved the bones, just never told nobody? Why would you think about it?
Yeah, move the
bones. Especially back in those days. It wasn't like there was Twitter. Wouldn't like I could take a picture and put it out there. You'd have to ride your horse to town, which might be 50 miles away, find a reporter, tell them. I mean, it just seems like a lot of work where, just pitch it over there in the bushes. Let's keep plowing.
That's right. I think, or they just dug another hole and stuck it in that hole, covered it up and kept going.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not 30 foot tall, not like the giants in Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones. I mean, but like 8.5, 9.5 feet still. That's crazy. Red hair, black bearded. I mean,
I like to picture the idea that Lord of the Rings isn't that far off of what it used to be like.
I do too.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe they were some of these crazy creatures that were still here, just like the dwarves and the elves. Like, maybe they were all really here.
I would like.
And the coming age of man is what drove them away.
Not only do I like to believe that that was what it looked like, I often fantasize it'd be cool to live in that realm.
Oh, of course. That's why I love Dungeons and Dragons.
Right? Yeah, we got an email from a guy about that, in fact.
Yep.
And I emailed him back and told him, yeah, what do we need to do to get that started?
Yeah. Dude, I'm down. I'm so ready to play.
Yeah, so, man, there was actually, you know, and there are, I mean, you know, like you go to Africa, the pygmies, you know, Justin Wren works with them.
Mm-hmm.
These are real things. So I think that's a lot, that's probably what it was that was over here. When you think, it didn't look like a gnome, it didn't look like an elf.
Yeah, it was just pygmy, a race.
A race of small.
Could have been a race of Native Americans that were all pygmies.
Absolutely. If it's happening in Africa, which is, I mean, you can go there today, fight for the forgotten. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the name of the thing that Justin Wren does for the pygmies?
Yes.
You can go there today, so why couldn't that same bloodline probably existed over there? Mm-hmm. And along with those lines, there were giants. I mean, it talks about it in the Bible. I know there's lots of stories in the Bible that don't make sense. I'm not saying that, but there are traditions of giants in folklore and legends and history.
In all stories, they've been there for ever.
But why do you think that that's not taught in school? Like we talked about, no one ever mentioned that. Why is that not taught? Because I think that's a pretty important thing that they're just not mentioning to people. Like, it wasn't just people. There were also giants. There were also short people, dwarves. Why are they not telling us that? What is the reason that they don't tell us that?
I mean, that's a good question. We could sit here and speculate all day about why we think, and you can attack the status quo. You could go after it and say, you know, they do it for this reason, or
I've read the stories,
religious reasons, or because of that, or because of this. But they still doesn't really hold true of why they should hold, especially now.
Well, I like when they mention religion a lot, but don't you think that would only strengthen Christians' beliefs if they found out that giants were real? Then you'd be like, oh, yeah. David and Goliath. That was a real story. It happened.
But it would also open up a can of worms to all of those opposed as well.
I guess so.
For wanting to know, well, if you know, where did that come from? And what does this change? And where did they go? And how did they die? And why did they die? And then you start going down and you start getting people that they want to worship differently. And things start changing.
I understand.
But in reality, like you had pointed out, school I always thought was supposed to be a place where you went to learn. And then as you get older, you realize like, no, it's a place they send you to conform.
Yeah, that's right.
Not to learn, to conform. You learn what on they your want own you when you get out of school. You have to learn on your own. Some people do. Some people do not.
Right. The state picks what they need to be taught. And, you know, they're trying to always master the STARS test or whatever. No, you should probably be telling your children what the world really was like. And if you don't know, just say, hey, look, we don't know. And that's what I do with mine.
If you're going to really, you want to worship at the foot of something, it should be taking care of yourself and others. And if you like to take care of yourself, and I know y'all do, and you like to be outdoors, and I know most all of you do, then you should have a garden.
I agree.
And if you want to learn some awesome gardening tips.
I know where you're going, yes.
We have some very close friends of ours that we've spoken about on this show multiple times. Mr. Logan Huffman and the Veronicas down in Australia, Lisa and Jessica. They have started a, not just an Instagram, but a YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is called Planted. And if you want to get all kinds of gardening tips, for those that don't know that about Logan, the son of a gun is a gardening savant. I mean, I don't know what.
Yeah.
The dude is awesome at it. Of course, I know he comes from a long lineage of farmers in his life, like in his history. And you're talking, man.
The passion. I mean, not only is he knowledgeable, but you could see it in his emotions.
So
he didn't just read the back of a package of seeds and then just trying to regurgitate in front of a camera.
So if you want to see some interesting stuff, I urge you all to follow. It's I Am Planted on Instagram, but it's just called Planted on YouTube. Jump on there. Check it out. You're going to find all. And it's inspired me, of course, to do me more too. In my garden, because I had a garden like we always talk about a while back, and I've already got mine ready to. I got a plant.
I think
I'm planting next week.
It's inspired me. I've been talking about it because, I mean, I don't need to practice archery anymore. I've already got that mastered.
Yeah, you've mastered.
So now I need to start working on something else. Yeah, I think I'm going to start a little vegetable garden. My wife's thrilled. I mean, she's got a green thumb. We have a million plants on our front porch and all over the house, too. Like, we can't even sit down and eat dinner at the dinner table because it's consumed with succulents and plants.
Yeah.
So it is very good, very cool. Also, if you want to help out the show, don't forget about our YouTube channel.
Yeah,
I know you already are listening to this, but if you want to help us out, a good way to go over there is just go to YouTube and subscribe. We're trying to get those numbers up.
And thank y'all so much for the reviews you've already started sending in.
Yeah.
But keep writing them. Keep pounding out more reviews. We're on a push for the 2,000 reviews. I think we're at 1.8.
Yeah.
So we're pushing for 2,000 reviews.
And you can go to our YouTube channel. You can see things that's not here on the podcast. Yep. Like we did a live stream. We're releasing book reviews over there.
Yep.
And then, like you mentioned, I think we're going to start doing some other stuff over there.
Yeah, we're going to start dropping some more videos on there.
Sounds good, everybody. If you have any stories of your own you'd like to share with me and Cam, don't forget to email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can follow us on all forms of social media. Hope everybody out there has a good Easter and a good work week. Be safe out there. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hill.
Wash y'all's hands, y'all.